8. Creeping her out. She watched Alberto trying to explain the helmet and the laptop to Virgin Security. These two blandly uniformed functionaries didn't look like they were much into the locative. At this point, she had to admit, neither was she. Alberto had some kind of Jim Morrison piece he wanted to show her, up on Wonderland Avenue, and that just wasn't going to work for her. Even if it somehow managed to bypass the Lizard King's iconic churlishness and focus on, say, Ray Manzarek's Calliope pieces, she still didn't want to have to write about invisible virtual monuments to the Doors, any of them. Though, as Inchmail had several times pointed out, back when they themselves had been in a band, Manzarek and Krieger had worked wonders, neutralizing the big guy's sodden crankiness. Standing out here in the evening hydrocarbon, in this retail complex on the corner of Crescent Heights and Sunset, watching Alberto Corrales argue that she, Hollis Henry, really should be allowed to view his virtual rendition of Scott Fitzgerald's Heart Attack, she felt a sort of detachment descend, some extra slack cutting, due quite possibly to her new haircut, executed to her complete satisfaction by a charming and talented young man in the Mondrian's salon. It hadn't been fatal, Fitzgerald's heart attack. Missing Alberto's depiction of it wouldn't be fatal for her article either, or missing most of it, as she had in fact been afforded a brief glimpse, a man in a tweed jacket clutching his chest at a chromed modern counter, a pack of Chesterfields in his right hand. The Chesterfields, she decided, had been in slightly higher resolution than the rest of the place, which had seemed interestingly detailed, down to the unfamiliar shapes of the vehicles out on Sunset, but Virgin Security's unhappiness with anyone donning a mask or mask-like visor in the world music aisle had put a stop to that, with Hollis quickly handing the visor rig to Alberto and hustling straight on out of there. Odile might have been cute enough to charm these guards, but she'd succumbed to an attack of asthma, she'd said, brought on either by the airborne biomass of the previous night's storm or by the near-critical mass of aromatherapy product to be variously encountered in the standard. And still, this calm descended on Hollis, oddly. This unexpected clarity, this moment perhaps of what the late Jimmy Carlyle, the Curfew's Iowan bass player, prior to departing this vale of heroin, had called serenity. Wherein, this calm, she knew herself to be that woman of the age and the history that were hers. Here, tonight, and was more or less okay with it, all of it, at least up till Node had come calling the week before, with an offer she could neither refuse nor really understand. If Node was, as the youthful but metallic Rausch had described it, a technology magazine with a cultural twist, a technology magazine, as she thought of it, with interesting trousers, did it really follow that she, former vocalist for the Curfew and sometime obscure journalist, would be hired for seriously good money to write about this witheringly geeky art trend? But no, said something at the still heart of her moment's calm. No, indeed. And the core anomaly here was embodied, revealed almost certainly, in Rausch having injected that apparent order to meet Bobby Chombo, whoever or whatever he might be, and, having met him, to watch for something to do with shipping, patterns of global shipping. That, she saw, was it, whatever it in this case might be, and likely had nothing to do with Odile Richard and the rest of these people. And then, her gaze on the passing stream of sunset, she saw the Curfew's drummer, Laura Heidi Hyde, driving what Hollis, never really a car person, took to be a smallish SUV of German extraction. If further confirmation had been needed, she knew that Heidi, with whom she hadn't spoken in almost 3 years, lived in Beverly Hills now and worked in Century City, and had almost certainly been glimpsed just now, heading home at day's end.
"Fascist dipshits," Alberto protested, flustered, stepping up beside her with his laptop under one arm, the visor under the other.
Somehow, he seemed too serious-looking to say something like that, and for an instant she imagined him as a character in some graphically simplified animation.
"It's okay," she assured him. "Really, it's okay. I got a look. I saw it. Got the general idea."
He blinked at her. Was he on the verge of tears? "Bobby Chombo," she said, when they were settled in Hamburger Hamlet, to which she had had Alberto drive them from Crescent Heights. Concern creased Alberto's brow. "Bobby Chombo," she repeated. He nodded grimly. "I use him for all my pieces. Brilliant." She was looking at the crazily elaborated black letter work down the outside of both his forearms. She could make absolutely no sense of it. "Alberto, what does that actually say on your arms?"
"Nothing."
"Nothing?" "It was designed by an artist in Tokyo. He does these alphabets, abstracts them till they're completely unreadable. The actual sequence was generated randomly."
"Alberto, what do you know about Node, the magazine I'm writing for?"
"European? New?"
"Did you know Odile before she turned up to do this?"
"No."
"Had you ever heard of her before?"
"Yes, she curates."
"And she got in touch with you about getting together with me for Node?"
"Yes." Their server arrived with two Coronas. She picked hers up, clinked the neck of his, and drank from the bottle. After a pause, he did the same.
"Why are you asking me this?" "I haven't worked for Node before. I'm trying to get a feel for what they're doing, how they do things."
"Why did you ask about Bobby?"
"I'm writing about your art. Why wouldn't I ask about the tech end?"
Alberto looked uncomfortable. "Bobby," he began, stopped. "He's a very private person."
"He is?"
Alberto looked unhappy.
"The vision's mine, and I build the work, but Bobby gets it up there for me, and he gets the routers installed."
"Routers?" "At this point, each piece needs its own wireless."
"Where's the one for River?"
"I don't know. The one for the Newtons in a flower bed. The Fitzgerald's really complicated, not always there."
"He wouldn't want to talk to me."
"I don't think he'd like it that you've even heard of him." He frowned. "How did you?"
"My editor at Node in London, the one supervising the piece, his name is Philip Rausch. He said he thought you'd know him, but probably Odile wouldn't."
"She doesn't."
"Can you get Bobby to talk with me, Alberto?" He's not a curfew fan?"
Something inside her cringed at playing the card. Alberto giggled. It came bubbling out of his big frame like carbon dioxide. He grinned at her, happily starstruck again. He took another drink. "Actually," he said, "he does listen to you. The curfew's music is something we were able to bond around."
"Alberto, I like your work. I like what I've seen. I look forward to seeing more. Your River Phoenix piece was my first experience of the medium, a powerful one."
His face went very still, expectant.
"I need your help, Alberto. I haven't done a piece like this before. I'm trying to get a feel for how things work at Node, and Node is asking me to talk with Bobby. There's no reason I should expect you to trust me."
"I do," he said with a remarkably groomly cadence. Then,
"I do trust you, Hollis. It's just..."
He winced.
"You don't know Bobby." "Tell me about Bobby."
He put a forefinger on the white cloth, tracing a line, crossed it with another at a right angle.
"The GPS grid," he said.
She felt minute hairs shift on the small of her back, just above the waistband. Alberto leaned forward.
"Bobby divides his place up into smaller squares within the grid. He sees everything in terms of GPS grid lines. The world divided up that way."
"It is, of course, but..." He frowned.
"He won't sleep in the same square twice. He crosses them off, never goes back to one where he slept before."
"You find that strange?" She did, certainly, but had no idea what passed for eccentric for Alberto.
"Bobby is, well, Bobby.
Strange? Definitely. Difficult." This wasn't going where she wanted it to.
I also need to know more about how you make your pieces.
That should do it, she thought. He brightened immediately. Their burgers arrived. He looked as though he wanted to brush his aside now.
I start with a sense of place, he began, with event, place. Then I research. I compile photographs.
For the Fitzgerald, of course, there were no images of the event, precious little in the way of accounts. But there were pictures of him taken in roughly the same period, wardrobe notes, haircut, other photographs, and everything I could find on Schwab's. And there was a lot on Schwab's because it was the most famous drugstore in America, partly because Leon Schwab, the owner, kept claiming that Lana Turner was discovered there, sitting on a stool at his soda fountain. She used to deny that there was any truth to the story, and it seems like Schwab made it up to get customers into the store. But it got the place photographed for magazines. Lots of detail.
And you make the photographs 3D?
She wasn't sure how to put it.
Are you kidding? I model everything. How?
I build virtual models, then cover them with skins, textures I've sampled or created myself, usually for that specific piece. Each model has a virtual skeleton, so I can pose and position the figure in its environment. I use digital lights to add shadows and reflections. He squinted at her, as if trying to decide whether she was really listening. The modeling is like pushing and pulling clay. I do that over an inner structure of joints, the skeleton, with a spine, shoulders, elbows, fingers. It's not that different from designing figures for a game. Then I model multiple heads with slightly different expressions and combine them.
Why?
It's more subtle. The expressions don't look made up if you do that. I color them, then each surface in the model is wrapped with a texture. I collect textures. Some of my textures are real skin, scanned in. The river piece, I couldn't get the skin right. Finally, I sampled a very young Vietnamese girl. It worked. People who knew him, they said so.
She put her burger down, swallowed. I didn't imagine you doing all that. Somehow I thought it would all just happen with technology.
He nodded. Yeah, I get that a lot. All the work I have to do, it seems sort of old-fashioned, archaic. I have to position virtual lights so shadows will be cast correctly. Then there's a certain amount of fill, atmosphere, for the environment.
He shrugged.
The original only exists on the server when I'm done, in virtual dimensions of depth, width, height. Sometimes I think that even if the server went down and took my model with it, that space would still exist, at least as a mathematical possibility, and that the space we live in...
He frowned.
Yes?
Might work the same way.
He shrugged again and picked up his burger. You, she thought, are seriously creeping me out. But she only nodded gravely and picked up her own burger.